Hi, I'm speaking with Michelle Hudson of the International Solidarity Movement, and you're in the West Bank right now in Tulkarm, right?
Correct.
Uh-huh. Can you tell us what's happening there?
What's happening here, it's relatively quiet, but they're expecting probably the tanks to come in. Tonight the tanks are in the air. There hasn't been any shooting or shelling so far. Last night there was heavy shooting in the refugee camp in the area. The last few nights, actually, and the night before last, there were 7 people arrested. There was a bakery blown up. There was a women's center blown up. And last night, there was one person shot. So.
And killed?
No. Just critically wounded. But actually, he's been sent home from the hospital already because the hospital's full. So we weren't even able to see him today.
What is it? What is the shooting you're hearing? Is there some type of battle, or is it just Israeli soldiers? Who's shooting?
Yeah, basically here it's just Israeli soldiers coming in with their tanks and just shooting, shooting at the building, shooting at everything, and just really heavy shooting and shelling going on. As far as I know, there hasn't been too much resistance fighting from the Palestinian side here in Tulkarm.
And I imagine that you've heard news of Arafat's compound being blown up bit by bit, and of the suicide bombing in Tel Aviv, and of the situation in Ramallah. Can you talk at all about that?
Yeah, I know currently Arafat's compound is surrounded and that they've entered it right now, and I know for sure that there's been one person killed and several people injured. Basically, there is probably over 200 people in there. The water lines have been cut, and they're probably going to be running out of food very shortly. All the electricity has been cut. I know that there's probably going to be a demonstration there tomorrow, and a lot of us here from Tulkarm are going to be going there to participate in the demonstration, basically, you know, to stand in solidarity with the people that are trapped inside.
Now, so, what type of demonstration is this going to be?
Mainly, we're just going to, it's Palestinian-led, so a lot of the local Palestinian people in the area just want to have a huge demonstration, basically to allow the people that are held hostage in there to come outside. So just going to try to bring a lot of media. I know there's already a lot of media there focusing on it, but, you know, just to show that there's, you know, support for the people in there, and that there's also a lot of international support here in the West Bank for the people to come out.
Now, do you expect any violent response from the Israeli army?
Well, you never know. Things could get volatile, but we're hoping that, you know, the fact that there's a lot of media there will, you know, help not happen, but we are expecting that it could happen, and it could lead to some people being arrested.
This is a nonviolent demonstration that's planned?
Correct,
okay. So, what have you been doing in Tulkarm, and how long have you been in the West Bank?
I've been in the West Bank now for 2.5 weeks, and in Tulkarm for 2 weeks, and a lot of the things we've been doing is focusing around the confiscation of the farmland, where they're going to be moving the pre-67 border in about 6 kilometers, and there's about 16 villages that are going to have about over 75% of their farmland confiscated. So we've had a couple of demonstrations. We've been talking to the farmers.
Maybe she'll call back. Go ahead. You've been meeting with some farmers?
Yeah, we've been meeting with the farmers in the area, trying to raise international awareness. We've sent out some press releases about what's going on, and we've had 2 pretty successful demonstrations with a lot of media there, and I know they're planning something really big for next Friday, and there may actually be a lot of participation from a kibbutz that's nearby, a village where the wall will be going through, and the kibbutz also doesn't want the wall there, so it should be a really good demonstration. They're even talking about an overnight, like, camp out with, you know, Palestinians and Jewish people there together protesting the wall. So
now,
basically just trying to raise awareness about it.
Why are the folks living in the kibbutz opposed to it? Do they support the Palestinians' cause, or are they just opposed to it because they don't want it running near them?
Basically, I think it's because they don't want it running near them. I haven't heard of anything that, like, a very political reason why they're opposing it, but just that I don't think that they want the wall there either.
But they are going to be demonstrating nonviolently alongside Palestinians against the construction of the wall?
Yes. Yes, they're going to be demonstrating, and I know there's going to be meetings in the upcoming week to see if they'll also participate in the overnight camp out.
Wow, that sounds great.
Yeah.
So can you describe the situation? You say that 75% of the land may be lost for these 16 villagers. And how many farmers have you met directly with, and what kind of impact is this having on the people living in the village and the farmers?
We've met several farmers, and actually the people that are living in the village also depend on their farmland for their very existence. I mean, for the food for the village, the income, the salaries of the people that work on the farms, in addition to the people that own the land. We've met with several people, and it's just really heartbreaking, actually, because, I mean, Palestinian families are, you know, by average, you know, really large, and they're going to be left with nothing. I mean, no food. The water wells are being taken as well, so pretty much everything's going to be gone, and they're just scared. They keep asking us, actually, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? You know, and in addition, we ask them the question, what are you going to do after it happens? And they have no idea. A lot of them, I think, are still in shock. They can't even believe that all of their land that's been in their family for hundreds of years is going to be gone.
Now, you say the Israeli army is building this wall. This is, my understanding is it's a 200-mile long, at least 6 kilometers wide, in some places wider, fence.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe?
Yeah, what it is, it's actually, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. It's actually a military road, and on each side of the road, there'll be a trench, and then on the sides of the trench, there'll be a fence, and so, yeah, the width of all that makes it so huge, because they have the, you know, fences there for security, and then, like, the road's huge, and so, in some areas, it'll be a wall, but most areas, it'll be a road.
And they're building this,
point of understanding.
They're building this in the West Bank. Are they also doing this in Gaza?
Not that I have heard of.
Well, Gaza doesn't border against Israel, so probably not.
Yeah, so I don't think that they're doing that as of now. I think it's just for this area for now.
I see. So, you know, these people that are losing their land, what kind of crops are they losing, and are they going to have anything left to live off of?
They're going to have very, very little left. What they're going to be losing is a huge amount of olive trees. Olive trees that have been around for, like, some of them about 500 years. Every type of fruit and vegetable. There's greenhouses with tomatoes and cucumbers and everything. There's eggplants out there. There's lime trees. There's fig trees. There's, and we've actually eaten it all, because every time we tour there, they keep offering us the food to eat. But pretty much everything that can be grown is being grown out there. And especially the olives is a huge concern, because that's like the primary source of some people's incomes. And there's just so many olive trees out there, and they're going to lose almost all of them.
And the justification for this wall, what is the official reason it's being built?
They actually gave the farmers this. The notification they gave them is just kind of a hand scribbled note on a blank piece of paper. It's really actually horrible, but and all it says on there is for security reasons for Israel. That's the only justification that they've received.
Well, do you think it's legitimate? I mean, there was just a suicide bombing in Tel Aviv, and there might be some legitimate reason to build this road to keep out.
I don't think that. Yeah. The thing is, a lot of the notices were left in the quote-unquote time of peace. Of course, that's what it's called whenever there's not a suicide bombing, although the Palestinians are still terrorized on a constant basis. But I don't believe there's legitimate reason. There's already a huge amount of land bordering all of the settlements that are there, and they're just making it even bigger. I mean, the land that they're taking is some of the most fertile land in the region, so I think that there's obviously ulterior motives for Israel to be taking the land, and I don't believe it's for security. I think that if they were really talking about security, they'd be really serious about ending the occupation right now. To me, that would be the cause of the suicide bombing.
Now, do you think these people are going to have to leave, since they're losing the majority of their land and their crops and their wells? Are they going to have to just leave?
That's their fear. Their fear is that, in addition to this wall, a lot of the villages are going to have their access to the village cut off, because the road's going to be completely blocked for them to come in or out. And some of the villages are actually going to be fenced in, because they're going to be inside the wall. And everybody's fear is that what's going to happen is it's going to turn into a refugee camp situation. And most of the people we've spoke to have just absolutely refused to leave, no matter what happens. They said they'd rather die than leave the land or move again, because they've already been uprooted. This will be the third time.
When you say it'll be like a refugee camp, describe, please.
Refugee camp is basically where the people have been uprooted that used to live in what was previously Israel, and now we're just left in this one small area. I know from the refugee camps I visited, I just can't even explain the amount of poverty. Really narrow alleyways, all the building, since they don't have a lot of space, they can't build out, all the building is up, horrible plumbing, you know, a lot of the areas smell like garbage and urine, and they don't have, you know, garbage facilities or anything, and just basically being trapped in there after being uprooted from where they used to live.
And they're living under military occupation, correct? I mean, aren't they basically every refugee camps patrolled by a lot of Israeli soldiers?
Yeah, all of the West Bank is under 100% military occupation, but the refugee camps are the ones that are even hit the worst and shot at the most.
Now, you say that you're in Tukarm and that there's about, what, 16 villages being affected in that town? That's only one town, though. How many other towns and villages along this 200-mile-long road-slash-security fence are being affected by this? How many?
It's mainly just the villages. My understanding, it's in total, it's about 20. So, and most of them are in this area, the Tokoram and Kalkilia area, but it's about 20 in total, I believe.
20 villages?
Yeah.
And how many people is that affecting? Hundreds?
Oh, I have no idea on the number of people.
Well, hundreds? Thousands? Can you give me...
Oh, thousands. Definitely thousands. I know in each... I mean, in some villages, there's over 3,000 people that live just in one village.
Uh-huh.
So, and the numbers from the people that we've interviewed, the numbers of people have ranged from about 1,200 to over 3,000 people in each village.
From being there on the ground and seeing the situation, you said a moment ago that you don't think this is for security purposes, that they already have enough land surrounding the settlements and between Israel and the West Bank. They're trying to just grab more. What do you think their purpose is in this? If you don't think it's for security, what do you think it's for?
I think it's basically to try to get the Palestinians, personally, I think it's basically to get the Palestinians to leave, to push them as far off as possible, and basically, you know, make it the state of Israel. I think it's, you know, to further the Zionist dream of actually pushing out the Palestinians, because like I said, it's not for security, and everyone that I've met has said that the reason for any of even the resistance fighting or anything, everything is solely contributed to the occupation. That's been the running theme from every single person I've talked to.
I just have a couple more questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
I probably should have asked you this at the beginning, but can you tell us why you went and a little bit about yourself?
I've been, I'm an activist, and I've been really interested in this issue. For a long time, and done a lot of organizing around it, and
in the Bay Area.
Yeah, in the Bay Area, and actually decided to go with a couple of people that I was really close to. So the timing all really worked out, and basically it was just I just wanted to come and stand in solidarity with the people and see it for myself, and get to know the people, and I knew it would be a life changing experience, and it absolutely has been. I've totally fallen in love with everybody in Palestine, and it's going to be hard even to leave, but it was just a really important thing that I felt that I had to do.
Now, there are people who would say, you know, well, you don't have a balanced perspective. Why don't, you know, you work with Jews who have suffered, you know, under suicide bombings. How would you respond to that?
It's hard to say. I mean, that not to have a balanced perspective, I mean, especially coming from the United States, where every single thing in the media is pretty pro-Israel anyways. And I mean, I do know a lot of Jewish people that agree with what I'm doing. I know a lot of Jewish people that don't agree with what I'm doing. But I think that, I mean, and especially just reading up about it and, like, learning what's going on, the situation is not balanced. And especially coming here, I mean, it confirmed that even more. I mean, what's going on here basically is, you know, genocide of a whole people, and that's what I learned from reading about it, and that's, like I said, what's been confirmed after coming here. Even after, you know, before I came here, of course, I did read the popular U.S. media that's really pro-Israel slanted, but, you know, still after researching it, like I said, believed that what was going on was wrong, and what the Israeli government was doing was wrong.
Have you worked with Jewish people and Israelis there who are opposing the occupation?
Yeah, we have had a couple people from Taiyush came out to the demonstration, not this Friday, but the Friday before, and I know that they're hoping that there's going to be a good number of people coming out next Friday for the really big demonstration. So that's been the one group that I've actually even met anybody from.
What is Taiyush? What is Taiyush?
What is what?
The group, Taiyush.
Taiyush, they're... Taiyush in Hebrew means coexistence. So therefore, you know, coexistence between the Palestinian and Israelis.
And it's a group of Palestinians and Israelis, obviously. What type of work do they do?
I'm not exactly sure because I wasn't too familiar with them before I came here, but I think that they do a lot of activism, I mean, around, you know, against the occupation and just against what's going on. And, you know, they're documenting a lot of, you know, what's going on and just, I think, trying to raise awareness and, you know, demonstrate against the injustice.
So why don't you give us some... end on some just personal observations, impressions, feelings?
Personal observations. The one thing that's been the hardest thing, I'm here with a lot of internationals, a lot of people from a lot of different countries, and every time we go anywhere and introduce ourselves, now that I'm Tracy, Lisa, and Jennifer have gone home, I've been the only American, and I think at first it takes people a long time to trust Americans, because in the running theme I felt over and over and over again that's just so hard is that every time, you know, I say I'm from America, they sit there and they always ask, why are the American people letting their government do this to us? You know, why does America do this to us? Do the people in America care about us? Do they know what's going on in Palestine? And I, you know, basically just say that the media is really biased. A lot of people in America have been taught to be really apathetic, and they don't really know much about what's going on in international affairs. And, you know, that one of my reasons for coming here was to go back and tell people. So that's been hard. But then also... just a lot of feeling of there's so much more that I wish that I could do, so maybe some hopelessness, just because the situation is so sad, and meeting some people who have told me just these stories that make my heart break. It's been really hard. But
such as?
Oh, goodness, I've heard stories about children that have seen their parents being shot, siblings that have seen their parents being shot, people whose, you know, family members have been arrested, and just... I mean, one couple that was going to lose all of their land, that's going to lose all of their land really soon, you know, told me a story about their son who didn't have his ID on him one day, and the Israeli army broke his arms and broke his legs and beat him up because he didn't have his ID, and then even took him all the way to the house to just for him to get his ID even after they did all of this, like drove him there because he couldn't walk after they broke his legs. I mean, and that kind of story is almost every single person here has a story like that. And it's so hard. The occupation has affected everybody so deeply. Everybody. Like, there's been nobody left untouched, and everybody has such a sad story, and it's hard. I mean, it's really hard to hear.
How do you know these stories are true? There are people who would argue that, well, you know, I've heard this argued, that, well, a lot of these Palestinians lie, and they just concoct stories to, you know, to create sympathy. How do you know what you're hearing is the truth?
Well, especially about the people who have died, every person that's died in the Intifada, there's a martyr poster made for them, and they're hanging everywhere, especially all around their homes, so I know that the people that have died definitely have. And, I mean, meeting these people and seeing, just hearing them tell me, I know that they're telling the truth. And the people here really do have a lot of integrity, and they're true. I know that they're true.
So, the people that are losing their land... how many of them have you met with, and what kind of things were they saying to you?
I can say I've probably met with about probably 30 families, and like I said, basically a lot of it's the same as, you know, and a lot of them haven't really been able to sell any of their crops for a long time now due to the travel restrictions, not being able to get into the cities and whatever, but even with what they have had, they've been able to feed their families and live off of their savings and things like that. But, I mean, after this happens, they're going to lose everything. And so a lot of the stories, as I said, they've just been, you know, there's nothing that they can do. And these, what is really bad is a lot of the farmland, because it takes so long to cultivate it, and they've been moved so many times, is for a lot of them, like, this is the first, like, really good crop they've had in years. And right when it's about to so they're about to go garden it. You know, the Army's going to take it, and that's even harder. I mean, a lot of them have built roads out in these areas with their bare hands. They've made the water wells, like, with their bare hands because there's no water systems out there. And it's, like I said, it's just really heartbreaking. I mean, everything, all of their hard work, everything. And a lot of what they've said is, you know, to them, their land is their soul, and their land means, like, so much more. And even if the Army offered them money for their land, they won't take it.
How long have they been on the land? I'm sure it varies, but...
Yeah, it varies, but most of the people that we've talked to, it's been in their land, it's been their family for generations, so for hundreds of years.
Why don't we end with, why don't we end today just with, you mentioned earlier that a lot of the people there plead with you to inform people back home or ask you why don't people in the United States do anything and don't they understand how things are for people in Palestine? How are we responsible? I mean, what role does our country play in this?
Because we give the Israeli government $3 billion a year, purely for security or for military purposes, and because most of the bullets that are shot at people here are made in the USA. So, and the people here are very aware of that. Everybody I've talked to is very aware of that, and they all know that the United States basically is hand-in-hand with the Israeli government and what's happening to them here.
Any final thoughts today?
No, of course I would like to encourage everybody that can to talk to as many people as they can about the situation, just to raise the level of awareness, get people to get more educated on the subject. Of course, if possible, come over here because then you'll definitely see it. But like I said, just to raise the awareness and keep talking to people about it, because the only way it would ever stop is if the U.S. government ever told it to stop. So...
All right. Well, thanks for your time today.
No problem. Thank you.